Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is September the 6th, and we are at the end of Parshas Chukas on page 854. Tonight, Mitzvah Hashem, we will finish Parshas Chukas, and then we will break until after Sukkos. We are up to the very, very end. We'd start from Pasuk Lamed Aleph 31. Before we do that, I want to go back to some of the psukim that we read last week, in when the Jews defeated and conquered Sichon and the city of Cheshbon. There's a famous chazal based on the psukim, starting with Pasuk Chav Zayin, verse 27. The pasuk there says, we read this last week, the pasuk says, Al kin yomru hamoshlim bo cheshbon tibone v'sikonein ir sichon. We said last week that this was referring to the moshlim, those who say a moshal, referring to Bilam and his father Beor, that they said a nevuah, they said a prophecy, that Cheshbon, which had been the city of Moab, would be defeated by Sichon. So they said that Bo'u Cheshbon, come to Cheshbon, meaning Sichon should come to Cheshbon, Tibone v'Sikonein, Ir Sichon, it should be built and it should be established as the city of Sichon. And it goes on from there. However, Chazal tell us, in an alternate reading of these psukim, of these verses, Chazal tell us that a person should always, it's a Mishnah really in Pirkei Avos, having mechash of schar mitzvah keneged hefseda, uschar vehefsed avera keneged schara. Person should always calculate the gain of a mitzvah versus its loss, and the loss of an avera versus its gain. What does that mean? What is the loss of a mitzvah? What's the gain of an avera? Well, the loss of a mitzvah, of doing a mitzvah, what's the loss in doing a mitzvah? A person could lose some pleasure, some enjoyment, some money, some time. A person does a mitzvah, it may cost money, it may cost his time, it may not be a very pleasant mitzvah, it may be uncomfortable. We give up when we do mitzvos. Most mitzvos are not pure enjoyment. There is some effort one has to put in, and we may feel that it's worth it. However, one would be fooling oneself if one would say that there is no, there's no cost in doing a mitzvah. If there weren't cost in doing a mitzvah, what would be the reward? Why should Hashem reward us for doing something that is effortless? There's always effort and there's always cost. But we also know the reward far exceeds the cost, that the reward is unimaginable for us in this world, for even the smallest mitzvah, all the more so for those mitzvahs that take a lot of effort. So the Mishnah says a person should be mechashev schar mitzvah keneged hefseda. Person should calculate what is the gain of the mitzvah versus the loss of the mitzvah. Person should make this calculation in advance before being confronted with the challenge of whether or not they will do the mitzvah, before the Yetzer Hara has a chance to say, why would you want to do this mitzvah? It's so difficult. Rather, a person should feel that the mitzvah is worth it. It's worth it to spend the money. It's worth it to spend the time. It's worth it to put in the effort. It's worth it to give up my sleep. It's worth it. Whatever it is, it's worth it. At the same time, every avera has a loss and a gain. Of course, we understand the loss. The loss is the spiritual loss. It's terrible. But there's also gain. Why would a person do an avera if there was no gain? What's the gain? The gain is pleasure, profit. There's always gain in doing an avera, otherwise there'd be no challenge in not doing the avera. Why would a person do the avera if it didn't taste good, feel good, give a person a sense of power, give a person money? Why else would a person do it? So there is gain in doing a mitzvah, but we know that the loss is far greater. So a person should be mechashev hefsid avera keneged schara. Hefsid, Well, I'm really saying it a little backwards. Hefsed mitzvah keneged schar, the loss of mitzvah versus its gain. Schar avera keneged hefseda, the gain of an avera versus its loss. Person should consider those things in advance. Because at the moment when a person is beset by their yetzer hara, nah, why would you want to get up? It's so, you haven't slept enough, you're tired. Nah, why would you want to go to shul? Why would you want to do that chesed? It's so hard. Why do you want to give away your money? The yetzer hara eats at us. And with averas as well. Oh, it tastes good, it feels good, whatever it is, why wouldn't you want to do it? The person, they stabbed you in the back, get them back, take vengeance, take revenge. That's the way the Yetzer Hara works, and it's hard to fight it at the moment. And therefore, in advance, one should make this calculation before they are beset by the power of the Yetzer Hara. And when one makes that calculation in advance, that gives a person a great deal of fortitude to fight the Yetzer Hara, because one has already decided that it is not worth it, that it's not worth the Avera, that it is worth the mitzvah. So Chazal tell us, the psukim here, the verses here actually hint to this Chazal. They read the psukim as follows. From Chav Zayin, from 27. Al kain, therefore, yomru ha-moshlim, the moshlim, a mashal may be a parable, but a mashal is also, a moshal is a ruler, someone who is a king, who's in control. Ha-moshlim, those who control their yetzer hara, those who have already fought the battles and have won. Those who we emulate, we look up to. We say, we want to be like that person. That person, they seem to have fought the Yetzer Hara for many years, and they've come out ahead. They're in control. We want to be like them. You know what they say? Hamoshlem, those who rule over the Yetzer Hara, they say, Bo Cheshbon, come to a calculation. If you want to be like us, if you want to rule over your Yetzer Hara the way we rule over our Yetzer Hara, Bo Cheshbon, come and make a Cheshbon. Come and make a calculation. Tibonev sikonein, you should be built and you should be established. If you do this, if you make this calculation in advance, then you will come out ahead, you will be built, you will be established, you will end up a great tzaddik. However, ir sichon, an ir means a city, but an ayar means a young horse or a young donkey. So, A young donkey goes after a sichat na'e, goes after a pleasant voice. You call to it. You call pleasantly to the donkey. It follows you. It will follow a pleasant sound. So if a person acts like an ir sichon, that which is a donkey that follows a pleasant sound, a person says, oh, that looks good, that smells good, that feels good, I'd like to follow that. If a person follows their Yetzer Hara, then what happens? Ki esh yatza mecheshbon lehava mikirya sichon. A fire comes out of cheshbon. A fire comes out of those who have made the calculation and consumes achla ar moav bale bamos arnon. It will consume those who have not made this calculation. Those who are in control of their Yetzer Hara, a fire will emanate from them and consume and destroy those who are not willing to try to make this calculation in order to control their Yetzer Hara. And Chazal go on from there in that vein with these psukim, making this connection between these psukim and this concept of making calculations in advance, and in so doing, controlling one's Yetzer Hara. The Ramchal of Moshe Chaim Lotzalto writes in the Mesilas Yesharim, in the Path of the Just, that, and we've talked about this before, that there are various types of Yetzer Hara, but the Yetzer Hara that we are beset with normally, what most of us go through, most of our struggles, we would call the regular Yetzer Hara. The regular, every person has within themselves a regular Yetzer Hara and also a more powerful Yetzer Hara. We regular people, we operate on a daily basis struggling with the regular run-of-the-mill Yetzer Hara. The great ones, the ones who have already conquered the regular Yetzer Hara, they deal with a different plane. They deal with a different type of Yetzer Hara. But we deal with the regular Yetzer Hara. The Ramchal writes that the regular Yetzer Hara is defeatable. And the formula for defeating the regular Yetzirah is simple. It's not a complicated formula. It may be a difficult battle, but the formula is not complicated. The formula is to be misbonin, to think about it, to consider it, to not bury our heads in the sand and pretend it doesn't exist, to not pretend that we're not caught up with the Yetzirah. All it takes, says the Mesillas Yesharim, says the Ramchal, is setting time aside every day to consider, where am I coming from, where am I going, and where am I now? The exact calculation that we make right now, this time of year, coming into Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, that is the very calculation that if one does that regularly, every day, says the Ramchal, one will naturally defeat their Yetzirah. It may take time, and it may take some struggling, but over time, one will emerge victorious by simply thinking about it on a regular basis. That is all it takes. Those who control their Yetzirah, they say to those of us who haven't yet gotten there, I'm telling you, this is the formula. Calculate. Think about it in advance. What will I gain by doing this Avera? Ah, tastes great. What will I lose by doing this Avera? I'm going to give up incredible closeness to Hashem, especially in the next world. What will I lose by doing this mitzvah? Ah, it's difficult. It takes a lot of effort. I'm going to have to be uncomfortable. What do I gain by doing the mitzvah? I gain eternal closeness to Hashem. That's what I gain. A person should think about those things in advance. And then when it's time to have the battle, they more often than not, they will win the battle. And slowly but surely, they'll chip away at their regular Yetzirah, and they will emerge as one who is in control, who is already Bo'ul Cheshbon, who has made the calculation. He will be a Moshe B'Yitzro. He will be one who rules over his Yetzer Hara. That's the advice given to us. The fact of the matter is that lesson is put here when the Psukim are actually talking about the Moshlim are those who say the prophecies, meaning Bilam and his father. That the alternative reading of the verses, rather than talking about Bilam and his father and their prophecy of Sichon conquering Cheshbon, it's about conquering the Yetzer with reflection, with thinking. The stark contrast that Bilam, who knew much more than regular people know, because he was given the special prophecy, he was given incredible insight and knowledge, yet he ends up being worse than everybody else. He does not make this cheshbon. He does not fight his Yetzirah. He uses his abilities, his knowledge, his insight for personal gain. That's what he uses them for, and he is destroyed on their account. That is the contrast that we have here between Bilam and his father, Beor, and people who are willing to make this calculation. Pasuk Lamed Gimel verse, excuse me, Pasuk Lamed Aleph verse 31. Vayeshev Yisrael Be'eretz HaEmori, the Jews settled in the land of the Emori on the east bank of the Jordan River, in what is called Aver HaYardin, the other side of the Jordan, or in more, not current terms, but not long ago terms, Transjordan. That's Arvos Moav. That's where they settled. Vayishlach Moshe l'ragel es Yazer. Moshe sent spies to spy out a place called Yazer. Vayilkidu benoseha. They conquered its surroundings. Vayoresh es Soemori asher sham. And they destroyed or conquered the Emori that lived there. The spies did this. Moshe sent spies. The spies said, we're not going to behave like the spies behaved 40 years ago. We are simply going to walk in and attack and just take over because we know Hashem is with us. And that's what happened. They had complete emuna in Hashem. They conquered Yazer without any problem, and they did not even bother going back. to report, they just conquered the land. Vayifnu vayalu derech ha-Bashan. Now the Jews turn and go up the way of the Bashan. Vayetze Og melech ha-Bashan ikrasam. So Og, the king of Bashan, came out to greet them. Hu v'chol amo, he and his entire nation, lamil chama, for war, Edrei, in a place called Edrei. So now the Jews have another major battle. They just defeated Sichon, and Sichon was a major, major battle. Now they have the war with Og. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hashem says to Moshe, Al tiroso, don't be afraid of him. Kiviyadcha nasati oso, because in his hands I've in your hands I've placed him. Ves kol amo, and all of his nation. Ves hatzo, and his land. Ve'asisa lo kasha, asisa li Sichon melech ha'amori, you will do to him what you did to Sichon, the king of the Amori. Asher Yoshef b'cheshbon, that was dwelling in Cheshbon. Don't worry about it. You got him in your back pocket. You can take care of him. Vayaku oso v'espanov, and they struck him and his sons, v'eskol amo, and all his nation, ad bilti shalo sarid, until there was absolutely nothing left of him. Vayirshu esartzo, and they conquered his land. So the Jews now take over the land of Sichon and the land of Og. Vayisu b'nei Yisrael, the Jews traveled, v'yachanu b'arvos Moav, and they dwelled in Arvos Moav, me'ever li'arden Yerecho, across from the Jordan River, across from the city of Yericho, right on the doorstep of Eretz Yisrael. The Jews now land there. We've just finished Parshas Chukas. We have a few more Parshas left in Sefer Bamidbar, and all of Sefer Devarim, the Jews are parked. They're not going anywhere. They're in Arvos Moav. Now, they just got there. They will remain there until Moshe's death, in Parshas Vizos HaBracha. And it will be under Yehoshua that they will finally travel from Arvos Moav, cross the Jordan River, and head into Eretz Yisrael to conquer the city of Yericho. But right now they're at the door. And that's where they will stay until the end of the Chumash. The famous Chazal here is, why does Hashem have to tell Moshe Rabbeinu not to be afraid of Og? Why should he be afraid of Og? There is no record of Moshe Rabbeinu being afraid of Sichon, so why is he afraid of Og? And in fact, he defeated Sichon. They defeated Sichon handily. So why should now all of a sudden they be afraid of Og? And Chazal tell us the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid of Og is because he was concerned that Og had a zechus. Og had a merit. And that merit perhaps will make it that the Jews would not be able to defeat him, and perhaps he would actually defeat the Jews. What merit did he have? This goes all the way back to the first time we are ever introduced to Og, which is way back in Parashas Lech Lecha, which I'm sure you all remember as if it was 13 years ago, which is, I think, when we learned it. So, if you turn back to Parashas Lech Lecha, hold the place here on 854, let's go all the way back. We know there was a war between the four kings and the five kings. And we know that the four kings defeated the five kings. And Lot was living in Sodom, which was one of the five kings, one of the five kingdoms. And when they conquered, the four kings defeated the five kings, they took Lot captive. And on page 62, somebody comes to tell Avraham Avinu what happened to his nephew and brother-in-law Lot. On page 62, Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, Vayavo ha-palit, and the one who escaped came, Vayageh le-Avram ha-Ivri, and he told this to Avram the Ivri. And then, as we know, Avram goes, he takes his few soldiers with him. The Pesukim tells us he took 318 men. Chazal tells us he took one man, because the gematria of Eliezer, the slave of Avraham, Eliezer Eben Avraham, Eliezer is the gematria 318. So he took Eliezer, and the two of them fought the four kings and defeated the four kings and saved Lot and his family and everything else. But it was the one who escaped who told Avraham. Who escaped? Who escaped? So the pasuk tells us The pasuk tells us earlier that when the four kings, before they got to the five kings, they conquered and destroyed many nations on the way as they were traveling to fight with the five kings. And if you look on the same page here, page 62, you look back a few psukim, the pasuk tells us in pasuk 8, verse 5, in the 14th year, Kedar LaOmer v'Amalachim asher ito, Kedar LaOmer and the kings who were with him came. Those are the four kings. Vayaku es Rifaim. They struck the Rifaim. Ba'ashros Karnayim. The Rifaim are translated as the giants. They struck and killed the giants in a place called Ashteros Karnayim. So the giants were killed, were attacked and killed by the four kings. Okay, fine. Well, if you hold the place here on page 62, simultaneously holding the page on 854, well, now you're going to turn ahead in the Chumash to Parshas Devarim on page 954. And here, when Moshe Rabbeinu is recounting what we just learned now, the defeat of Sihon and Og, we have an interesting pasuk. Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, on page 954, the pasuk tells us, Ki rak Og melech ha-Bashan, for only Og, the king of Bashan, nishar, remained mi yeser ha-Rifaim, from the remnant of the Rifaim. Who are the Rifaim? We just read that. Parshas Lech Lecha, that the four kings attacked and struck against and killed the Rifaim. And here it says that Og was the only one who survived from the remnant of the Rifaim. For here we understand that Og was one of the Rifaim. The Rifaim are the giants. And the Og, when it says, Vayavo ha-Palit, and the one who escaped came to Avraham, escaped, who escaped? Well, in Parashas Devarim, we learn that Og survived, that he was the sole survivor of the Rephaim, who were just attacked by the four kings. Therefore, the escapee is Og, one of the Rephaim, and the only one to have escaped the destruction that the four kings brought upon the Rephaim. That's how we know that this person is Og. That is the simple meaning of the escaped one, the one who escaped. That's the simple meaning. However, Chazal tell us there's a deeper meaning, that Og escaped from something else. He escaped from the attack of the four kings, which is true, but he also escaped something else earlier in his life. And that, Chazal tell us, is the Mabul. That Og actually lived before the Mabul. He's one of the giants. The giants were brought into existence in Parashas Bereishis pre-Mabul, before the Great Flood. But Og survived the Great Flood. And that's what it means, Hapalit, the one who escaped. What did he escape? He escaped the Flood. And that is also meant over here when it says that he is Miyeser HaRifoim, and he is the one who, he is of the remnant of the giants, and he is the Palit, the one who escaped. Now Chazal tell us in Maseches Zevachim, the Gemara discusses how did Og survive the Mabul, the Great Flood. The Great Flood was, first of all, water everywhere. There was no dry land that was not covered with water. Even a giant, how does he survive the year-long flood? How could he survive? Number one. Number two, even if he somehow was able to keep his head above the water, the Gemara tells us the water was roschim. The water was boiling water. It wasn't just warm water or hot water. It was boiling water. Everything was destroyed except the fish in that water. So how could Og have survived? The Gemara tells us, well, how did the Teva, how did the Ark survive? The Teva was covered with pitch, and it was, you know, over the wood, which would make it waterproof, but the boiling water should have broken down any kind of protective barrier that the Teva had, and it should have sunk. So Chazal tells us there was a nes. The miracle was that the water immediately around the Teva was not boiling, was cool water. The water immediately around the Teva. All the other water in the world was boiling water, but the water around the Teva was cool water, and it was not boiling. Og was able to hold on to the Teva throughout the ordeal of the Mabul, and he survived. He survived not inside the Teva, but outside the Teva, and he survived. He was able to keep his head above the water, and he was able to survive the hot water because he was with the Teva. The Teva was only in cool water. That is what Chazal tell us in Maseches Zevachim, that Og survived the great flood. And then, when the four kings later in history take Lot captive, Og comes and he tells Avraham what happened. He tells him that Lot was taken captive. Now, Chazal tell us Og did not have good intentions. Og wanted to marry Sarah. Sarah was a very, very, very beautiful woman, and Og wanted to marry her. And therefore, he wanted to get Avraham killed so that he could marry her. So he thought the best way to get him killed is here these four kings who are very powerful. They have an incredibly huge army. The Gemara tells us over 1 million soldiers in their army. So just get Avraham to go and try to fight with them, and that'll be the end of Avraham, and I'll be able to marry Sarah. That was what he was thinking. And therefore, he sent Avraham to go save his nephew and his brother-in-law, Lot. And Avraham, of course, is victorious, and Og's plan does not work. Chazal tell us that Og, therefore, was still waiting to marry Sarah, even after this incident. And he said, Avraham and Sarah, they have no children. No one's born to them. It's clearly going to be that Avraham will have to divorce Sarah, and then I'll be able to marry her. However, of course, Yitzchak is born, and that whole plan falls apart. But Chazal tell us that Hashem said to Og, you looked with a jaundiced eye, with an evil eye, at Avraham and Sarah. Well, you're going to live long enough to see that they're going to have millions of offspring. You will live long enough to see Avraham and Sarah's descendants become a great, huge nation, and they will kill you. And that is what happens here. Og is here as the king of the Bashan, and Moshe Rabbeinu is afraid to attack Og because of Og's zuchus, his merit. So he's afraid that he may not be able to defeat him. And Hashem says, don't worry about it. You've got him. You'll be able to defeat him. So that is what happened. He was defeated. How is he defeated? Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos, the following is what happened. Now, it's hard to know whether this entire story is literal or whether part of it is meant to be an allegory. It's hard to know. It may be the entire thing is literal. Chazal tell us that Og saw the camp of the Jewish people. He saw how big it was. It's a big camp. Lots of people. Millions of people. So Og, who was very, very, very large, said, I'm just going to get rid of them in one fell swoop. And he went and he found a mountain. The mountain was wide enough to bury all the Jewish people. And he was Oker Harim. The mountain. And he took it to go throw it down on top of the Jews. Well, a mountain like that is a very large thing and bulky thing to carry, so he had to figure out a way to carry it. So he picked it up and put it over his head, and now he's carrying it on his head. It's much wider than he is, and he's carrying this mountain over his head, and he's walking to throw it down on the Jewish people. Hashem brought worms or ants. They ate out the interior of that mountain, causing it to then fall over Og's head. And now this mountain is stuck over his head. He tried to pull the mountain off his head. So Hashem caused his teeth to grow out and to grow into the mountain and embed themselves in the mountain. So now he can't get this mountain off his head because his teeth are lodged into the mountain. And now he can't see, he can't fight, he can't do anything. He's incapacitated because of this mountain stuck over his head. And now Moshe Rabbeinu has the ability to fight with him. Moshe Rabbeinu takes a sword, and this is where the numbers are hard to know whether it is literal or not. The Gemara tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu was himself 10 amos tall. That is a very tall person. 10 amos tall is the size of a person that we've never seen. Far taller than the tallest person that we're aware of. 10 amos would be more than 15 feet tall. A very, very tall person was Moshe Rabbeinu. He took a sword that was itself 10 amos, and he jumped 10 amos and struck Og as high up on Og's body as he could, 30 amos in the air, meaning 30 amos high up. Moshe Rabbeinu is 10 amos, the sword is 10 amos, and he jumps 10 amos. That's 30 amos. 30 amos high, and he strikes Og, the Gemara says, Bikarsulov. Karsulov is taken to mean his ankle. Even if you want to say it means his knee, because it means a joint. Either way, that would make Og a very, very huge, huge, huge giant that Moshe Rabbeinu attacks. And he successfully cuts him down with that attack, and Og falls, and he is killed. And that is the end of Og, and it happens over here in this battle at Edrei. That is the end of Og, and the Zechus that he has does not protect him in this case. Even if the numbers are exaggerated, but we get the picture, that there is this massive person, Moshe Rabbeinu has to jump to strike him, does, and kills him. What does this picture of this man carrying this mountain and carrying it to throw over the Jewish people, what image does that conjure up in your mind? If you answer that it conjures up in your mind the image of Matan Torah, of the giving of the Torah, then that would be correct. At the time of the giving of the Torah, we know that Hashem was Kafa Alem Har Kegigis. He took the mountain, he took Har Sinai, and he placed it over them like a barrel. And he said, if you accept the Torah, fine. If not, Sham Tehek Furaschem, then you will be buried here. Exactly what Og wanted to do to the Jewish people, to bury them. That was the threat if we did not accept the Torah. Og seems to have thought that the Jews were vulnerable to being accused of not having fully accepted the Torah. Because a non-acceptance of the Torah for the Jewish people results in being buried under a mountain. Og seems to feel that this is something that they are vulnerable towards, and we can throw a mountain down on top of them and kill them. Of course, that is not the case. And the mountain plan does not work, and Og is killed with this attempt to kill the Jewish people. Why does the Zechus that Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid of, the merit Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid of, why doesn't it actually protect Og and make it difficult and perhaps even hurt us, which is what Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid of? Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid that Og's merit, that he saved Lot, that he came and he told Avraham Avinu about Lot, that will give him merit to destroy us. That's what he was afraid of. Hashem says, don't be afraid. Why not? What's the answer? Okay, we got Hashem's guarantee. But why did Hashem guarantee it? What's the answer to Moshe Rabbeinu's fear? Why shouldn't he be afraid? Now let's think about it for a moment. Og wanted to... He told Avraham Avinu that Lot had been taken captive. Why? He did it because he wanted to marry Sarah. It was not pure motivation. It was in order to marry Sarah. Okay? But we know we are rewarded even for things that we do with poor motivation. If we do the right thing, even if our motivation isn't great, we do get rewarded. So Og, Moshe Rabbeinu reasoned, deserves reward. Even though Moshe Rabbeinu knew full well Og was, it was his intentions were not the greatest, still, the fact of the matter is, through him, Lot was saved. Avram went and destroyed the four kings. So, why? So that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid of. Hashem says, don't worry. Why not? So Og's intention was for Avram to be killed to marry Sarah. And when that didn't work, and Sarah survived, Avram survived, then Og hopes that they won't have any children. And Hashem makes Og live long enough to see all the Jewish people. Here you have the ultimate coming full circle, which is as follows. Can a person get reward for doing something good, but their intention was not necessarily good? And the answer is yes. One can get rewarded even for doing something good where they had no intention whatsoever to do anything. The classic case is shikcha. Shikcha is the mitzvah that if one forgets bundles or sheaves in the field, then they go to the poor people. And a person gets rewarded for the mitzvah of tzedakah if they leave their shikcha. Rashi there tells us in the name of Chazal, if a person get rewarded for forgetting something, then Hevi Omer, we should say, if a person drops a coin, didn't mean to, you dropped a $20 bill in the middle of the street, you didn't realize it, and a poor person finds it, and it gives that poor person sustenance, you get reward. You get reward for what? You didn't intend to do a mitzvah. It wasn't your intention to listen to Hashem or do something good. Nevertheless, a good thing came from you, then you get rewarded for that mitzvah. That's the system Hashem put in place. What if a person does have kavani, does have intention, but his intention is not pure? Okay, Hashem wants us to have pure intentions, but even if we don't, we still get rewarded. And most of the time when we do anything, we have multiple motivations for what we do. We do a mitzvah and we have various personal motivations and various pure motivations. And Hashem says, make it as pure as you can. You're going to get rewarded anyway. The more pure you make your motivations, the greater the reward will be. That's what Hashem wants from us. Lishma should be done in the name of Hashem. That's what He would like. But any mitzvah is valuable even when it is not done lishma, or it's only done partially lishma. What if a person has intention to do the opposite of the mitzvah? The mitzvah is to help somebody. The person's intention was to hurt that person, but circumstances caused that instead he helped the person. It got turned on its head. Does the person get rewarded for that or not? The answer is, sometimes. What determines whether a person gets rewarded for that or not? When a person had intention to hurt someone else, but in the end, due to circumstances they did not foresee, instead they helped somebody else. What determines whether they get rewarded for that or not? And the answer seems to be, you see later on whether their future actions, whether they support or contradict their previous intentions. Person intended for bad, and they did something which they meant to be bad, but it turned out good, and it helped somebody else. Do they get rewarded? Well, let's see down the line, is this person going to continue to try to hurt the other person? Or the person say, well, clearly the hashgacha is Hashem wants this person to have good done to this person, so I'm now going to seek that person's good. That will reflect on the original act. If a person tried to do bad to someone and it turned out good, and then later on the person still tries to do bad to that person, then retroactively we see it was all bad. Even though it turned out good, that was not his intention at all, and the reward for that is minimal, if at all. Whereas, if a person meant to do bad, first to someone else, and it turned out good, but then later we find the person has embraced this new role of doing good for the other person, Hashem says, even that act that you intended to do bad, but it turned out good, you're going to get rewarded for that as well. Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid that Og would be rewarded because at the end of the day, something good came from his actions. That he saved Lot. Hashem says, don't worry about him. He's not a threat. Because we see from his actions now that all he wants to do is attack Jews and kill Jews and get rid of Jews and make it that Avram and Sarah retroactively never had any children because they're all dead. That's what he's out to do. Says Hashem, if that's the case, then the fact that he inadvertently helped Jews at one time doesn't count for much, if anything at all. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, don't be afraid of Og. He's not going to be able to do anything to you, and you will be able to defeat him. You'll be able to win this war, which is, in fact, what happens. And the Jews do attack Og in Bashan, in Edrei, and they defeat Og and take over his land. So now, at the end of Parashas Chukas, what we have is the Jews now at the cusp of Eretz Yisrael, right across the Jordan River from Jericho, ready to move at a moment's notice and move in to attack Jericho and the rest of Eretz Yisrael. That's where we are. But the next parasha, Parashas Balak, we're going to be derailed a little bit because of the fear of the Moav people who were being protected by Sichon, and now they are no longer being protected. So Mirza Hashem, that will be what we will lead off with. We'll lead off with Parshas Balak, Bez Hashem, next time, which would be after Sukkot. I want to give you a date for that, but that's going to be after Sukkot, so we're going to wait several weeks until that happens. And we are talking about October the 18th. October the 18th, that will be our next class, Be'ezras Hashem, which is after Sukkot, Sunday, October the 18th. Right? As of now, that is our next class. Everybody should have a Ksiva V'Chasim Atova, a good Geben Shtior, should have a meaningful Yomim Noroyim, whether you are in person or whether you are at home, wherever you are, it should be an uplifting experience and grow close to Hashem through it. Let me pause for any questions before we end the shiur for tonight. Okay, have a good week. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.